Hello there. This is Vector Podcast Season 3, and I'm super excited to be talking to Sid Propstein, second time on the show, which means that you guys are progressing quick. And as usual, you have a lot to say, I'm sure. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here. 1 year later.
Exactly 1 year later. A lot has happened. I was thinking about Swirl. I've been actually also a little bit like promoting it, in my circles. And the last thought that crossed my mind was, you are taking this radically new approach that I don't think many people are talking about, and I also don't see that much of that same thing happening elsewhere. You bring your technology to the data. In some sense, you could see some analogy with Hadoop, I think. Yeah, when computation was brought to the data, not vice versa, because data was big, so it's very hard to copy it. But your approach is, of course, different, and the problem that you're solving is different because it's siloed search engines, siloed data. You come in, you plug in your device, your Swirl, and you get a single keyword box. It's amazing. It's really amazing. So what I wanted to ask you, let's start off, and of course, those who haven't seen the first episode, please take a look. I'll link it. But I wanted to hear what happened in the past year. Can you walk me through?
Absolutely. It's an amazing time, I think, in the industry, right? Almost every week there's a massive new important headline, some AI advance that if you don't get in front of it, it's going to be the end. Anyway, since that happens every week, I've kind of gotten used to it, but I think from the perspective of the large enterprise, right, big regulated companies with thousands and thousands of users and thousands of systems, that it's been a time of inspiration and a little bit of continued nervousness about what it all means. Last March, on the 15th, actually, was the was or 14th was Pi Day, and that was the 1 year anniversary of GPT-4. What I've learned is that those large enterprises were, again, looked at GPT-4 and said, "This is going to change our business. This can really help everybody be an efficient expert." And just slice through, right, the current problems of siloed data and inconsistent systems. But at the same time, there was a lot of fear about, well, if are we exposing valuable internal data to AIs that are then going to be trained on it? Is this going to be exposed, lost? There have been many, many lawsuits. So ultimately, the large enterprise did what they always do, which is engage with it on their own terms. And many of them purchased, download, installed, right, AI, generative AIs, and LLMs in their private clouds. And we're working with one large company that did that and trained it with a bunch of what they called safe data. So annual reports and employee handbook. And it's very interesting to talk to, but it can't really help a business person, right? Or somebody trying to answer a question in the supply chain group or in the R&D group or in HR. Because it doesn't have access to those systems. And in those places, you've ever worked there, you know, when you onboard, the first thing they do is your manager does, right, is they open a bunch of tickets so that you can have access to systems. That's hard enough. So the reason that there's been so little, in a way, so little progress, right? Lots of installs of AI, but not that much real. I'd love to hear from you some of the use cases out there. People are still trying to say, we're still trying to get the data to the AI so that it can provide the benefit. And what ultimately what happened is this. They've got the AIs installed. The first generation of AI architecture for solution architectures is what I will refer to as a vendor-driven put the data in architecture. Literally every product out there, I don't want to name them, but they all say the first step is put the data in. Again, like for some people, for many applications, for POVs, for testing it out, that's great. And who hasn't done it with a few PDFs, right? And got some interesting results. But you can't just take a copy of a departmental database and hand it over to a centralized corporate database for training. Like that, there are rules in place to prevent that. Even more difficult is the idea that you would send it outside your perimeter into someone else's cloud, right? At another big manufacturing firm, they have a 24-month waiting list to onboard a new SaaS product, right? They're like, we have to put our security team on it. So I believe it's a very interesting time. And ultimately, what happened is Swirl thought differently about the problem. As you said, we thought about it from the search technology perspective. Why would we move all of the data? Instead, move the, essentially take only the data that's needed and give it to the AI at that moment. And what Swirl does first to do that is we create a single pane of glass. The next thing I'll mention is Swirl is software. We are a software company, and our software is typically deployed in the customer's private cloud. We are happy to do hosting for POVs and for various applications, but for large enterprise, we don't expect that to be the case. Once you deploy Swirl, it integrates with your single sign-on system, such as Microsoft or Okta or Ping Federate. Others, you can have CAS, whatever in there. Once it's configured, you send a question, a prompt, or a query, a search query, to Swirl. It brokers that query to all the sources that it's authorized to do so, and it does so on behalf of that user. So it's not only is it safe, compliant search using existing infrastructure, but it's personal. The data that the user or caller gets back is based on what that user can see. So I use it all the time, and it's my email, my Outlook, my calendar, my LinkedIn, whatever, right? It's my view. We actually love the idea that we should present the data to the user. So you get that single pane of glass, and actually you can decide what to do with it. You could say, I don't want this source or whatever. You can make adjustments. But ultimately, we then execute RAG. We have our own excellent high-quality RAG, better than many. In particular, it seeks highly relevant passages from all of the documents. We can fetch the documents and authenticate on the fly to do that. Bind those to a prompt. We have our own prompt engineering. You can override it and then do the RAG against a huge list of AI providers. Actually, we support more than 20 today, including most of the ones we see out there. OpenAI, OpenAI and Azure, Bedrock, Anthropic, Google, Mistral, Cohere, etc. And in all cases, no code should be required. You configure an existing connector, more than likely. You're putting in just endpoint information and authentication tokens. And then Swirl, again, does that brokering, creates that pane of glass, and executes RAG. You can also use Swirl just for the R if you have your own RAG, right? You can get the result list and do your fetching, or you can hook after you've got the Swirl has the fetched results, and you can operate that on just the full documents. The key to this, I love that you asked, is the Reader LLM. We have been really heads down working on the Reader LLM. I've actually been asking people if they have heard the term before, and many haven't. I don't know what your take is on Reader LLM these days.
Oh, yeah, I'm still catching up, really. I mean, the way I see it, and I'm still kind of plowing through RAG itself, right? So you said, what is my take on how easy it is to onboard to these AI models and so on? I have a sense that people are aware of this because it's so easy to access through ChatGPT and similar tools. But then when it comes to deploying these things, I don't think that it's as easy, right? So because you'll have to go through a list of models, you need to figure out which one to pick, and hence you need to be a data scientist, right, at that point, or ML practitioner or whatever. And it's not, and it's like the web is exploding with so many cheap advice, you know, use this, use that. But then as you go through that process, you realize that none of those models work. And so you need to do something. Okay, there is RAG, but setting up RAG means that you need to bring in, I don't know, a vector database that you haven't seen before and things like this, right? So it's, yeah.
So I love that. So just speaking of misinformation, right? I think you're absolutely right. There's so much confusing stuff out there. You do not need a vector database to RAG. You never did. It's a vendor thing that I totally understand. They're charging per gigabyte or whatever, so they say you have to have it to RAG. There's an excellent study by ZHub, and actually Simpson Garfinkel is an advisor to Swirl. You may have heard that name. He's an incredible tech writer. He recently wrote a study, a survey or a summary, I should say, of the ZHub study. The ZHub study shows that you do not need to vectorize your data to get high quality results. Instead, you just increase the number of results you get from a so-called naive non-vector search engine or database and re-rank using vectors. That's exactly what Swirl does. We vectorize the result set snippets. We vectorize the full text of the documents. We vectorize the query, the prompt, whatever it is, right? And our reader LLM is responsible for a complex similarity re-ranking. You can actually plug your choice of embeddings into our reader LLM. Embeddings are actually just a feature, one of the many things that LLMs do. So you can change that. But the reader LLM, here's really the core of it. It's the middle layers of the generative AI LLM. Without the, you know, text generation and text interpretation part, that's not there at all. Instead, you use it to determine the similarity, right? Cosine, or there are many different algorithms. But ultimately, you're taking some algorithm like that and you're using embeddings plus the reader LLM's own knowledge to say how similar is the query or prompt or part of it to the response that I got, or find the most relevant passage in a document. Because you're absolutely right. There are tools like LangChain out there, as one example, which give you lots of interesting tooling, right? But it's still on you, the developer. I actually had ChatGPT generate me a pipeline just as a demo. And the biggest problem is it generated a function that I have to fill in, which is called select documents. That's really hard. And ultimately, like, you're basically just providing the pipeline to move the data once again. But it's the reader LLM in Swirl is all about re-ranking and finding the best passages so that you are not sending a 100-page PDF of which one paragraph is relevant. You are sending the paragraph. And that way, you can put a lot more data, and you can also not blow out your token limits, right? Assuming you have such a thing if you're on-prem. But that's the reader LLM. And I'll say this, their reader LLMs are the unsung heroes of especially search, but also of RAG. When you're looking at, I would say Bing or ChatGPT, and you ask it a question and it goes and fetches documents from the web, it's almost certainly using a reader LLM to determine which pages are best. And to be fair, right, Bing and Google have incredible knowledge of that already, so it's not like it's that hard. But then they're almost certainly reading the most relevant passages, right? They're not just passing the whole web page in. So reader LLMs are a thing. They're definitely becoming more and more prevalent, and they provide a critical non-hallucinating step to help find the best results so the user doesn't have to.
And that's very interesting. And how, let's say if you plug into a company's network, right? So, and they focus on something, I don't know, healthcare, banking, what have you, would you need to fine tune reader LLM in any way?
No, and I actually don't recommend it. I think there's a lot of evidence that fine-tuning, because of its fundamentally lossy process, right, is somewhat responsible for hallucinations. There's been quite a bit written about this. And I think that ultimately the winning combination today is that you use a very well-trained, capable model that is generalist, and you provide it with the data that you need to provide it with at the moment you need to. For example, Swirl's prompt engineering does a few things. One, we force it to only consider the RAG data and not add its own model thoughts, right? You can interpret, but don't create facts that aren't presented to you. Second, force it to disambiguate. This is one of the worst errors in prompt engineering is just letting it go right up on past, equating, right, two entities with the same name as if they're the same thing. So our default engineering says, listen, if you see two entities with the same name, don't, you know, essentially call that out and don't just gloss over it. The last one is, especially when you're talking about multiple sources of data and enterprise data, the user must be able to verify. Nobody wants to make a career limiting move because they took ChatGPT's answer and said, here it is, right? And put it up on the investor site. Not a good idea. But Swirl also forces the AI to quote the sources it used, to cite them. And of course, you also have access to the underlying search results, right? So you can verify that, yes, you have $1 million in insurance coverage and it covers X, Y, and Z. That's key.
Yeah, that's amazing. You reminded me of, you know, when you said about hallucinations, I was just listening to one interview. This is not related to AI world or tech world. It's political sciences. And so she was asked, the scientist, she was asked, you know, are you using ChatGPT at work? And she said, yeah, sometimes I do. Sometimes I use it as a co-writer. So, you know, I draft some things quickly and I still see that ChatGPT is very crude, you know, in the way it approaches, you know, I can do it better, but sometimes I'm just, you know, lazy or tired. Okay, let it do it. But then the thing that struck her was that it actually hallucinates. She was asking, give me, you know, top five books in political science, you know, in specific country. And ChatGPT was very confident and said, these are the five books and the authors. And when she Googled them, they don't exist. And then she said, they don't exist. And then ChatGPT responded, okay, here is only one book that you should read. And that didn't exist either. So she was genuinely like baffled. And she said, okay, you might say something with less confidence, but why lie? Why do you lie? She doesn't know what is hallucinations, but she looks at it as a user.
And it's very disconcerting. So believe it or not, when I first started using GPT-4, I got a hallucination that I thought was so real. I wrote to the publisher and said, why is this article no longer online? And the publisher wrote back and said, there is no such article, but it could have been. It was authored by someone. They said, GPT-4 said it was authored by another author who had posted on that site. The URL looked correct and the content looked, I mean, the snippet it gave me looked absolutely real. But again, when they build these models, a few, you know, 10, 20 gigabyte model, right, of GPT-4 or 3.5 or whatever it is, petabytes and petabytes of data went into that. So by definition, it's lossy. But the way the LLM, the generative part works is it must provide a response. So you know how that is when you can't quite remember the name of something? And it's essentially doing the same thing. So it knows it. I saw an artifact that looked like that, but I don't have the artifact anymore. So it generates something that is the consensus version of what it would have been had it existed. And that's why I don't believe in fine tuning so much. I think if you have a capable model with some reasoning and the ability to interpret text and follow instructions, you provide it with your internal data. And that is the beauty of RAG. Because here's the thing. The reason it's so good at things, why does ChatGPT-4 sound like a smart person on, you know, Reddit or Facebook or something like that, right? It's because that's where it was trained from. Your internal, and of course, on something like Reddit or whatever, they have the same conversation 10 million times, right? I mean, how many discussions of whatever, Twin Peaks or Battlestar Galactica, you know, are there? There are a lot of them. And so it learns the core of these things, right? And can answer those questions. But if you feed it your internal data, like, it's probably not so repetitive. It's probably much more conflicting than not. And so that's why you produce more problems. It's much better. Give it the one thing that's really relevant and let it reason.
Yeah, that sounds cool. And it's like live, right? It's something that can be updated throughout the life cycle of your company or department, whatever. But there is one challenge that I want to offer to you and came to me just today as I was thinking and preparing for this episode. Data is not gold. You know, sometimes it is gold because everyone talks about it, la la la, but like it also is very complex machinery and it can have mistakes of its own, you know, misattribution, misclassification, a human error, what have you. How would you say Reader LLM or Swirl gonna tackle this issue, or is it just gonna transparently sort of like garbage in, garbage out type of response?
It's a great question. Speaking of hallucinations in AI, right? We all have probably worked with somebody at one time or another who made a mistake, right? Or whatever, didn't understand the problem well enough. And that stuff gets into Teams and Slack and, you know, documents around. Like, you're right. It's incredibly messy in the enterprise. Has anybody not worked at a firm where they had, you know, 500 versions of the same PowerPoint that has just evolved, right? So absolutely. Well, these are things that ultimately are going to have to be continue to be work on. But here's my point. Number one, if you leave the system in the system data in the system of record, you're much less likely to introduce new problems, especially like security problems. And if you leave it in the system of record, then any domain modeling, lexicons, ontologies, taxonomies, you get the benefit of those. If someone cared about that source, they might very well have done some of that, right? So if you pull it all out and put it in a vector database, like what happened to all of that knowledge? So I would argue that the systems of record that are valuable have things in place to deal with that. Number two, the Reader LLM does a couple things to help this. One, it's aware of certain commonly problematic formats. Email is the worst. Reply forward and signature content, very, very problematic. We have a solution for public data too, so that you can get article content without getting, as an example, navigation, advertisements, cloaked data, stuff like that, right? So, because very often public data is relevant, right, to large enterprise, like if they want to see policy changes, regulatory changes online, catalog changes, right? That's all relevant stuff. Then there's the similarity problem, right? So another thing the Reader LLM does is it can do semantic analysis to determine which is the latest version of the same document. that's a one of the great LLMs are amazing at that. Much better at old school, like multi-window setups where you're trying to take out like a signature of the document and say, well, this could, it's very similar, but the LLM does it much better, right? And you can quickly say, now, this is the latest version of that spreadsheet. Or you can let the user decide. It's another thing. Who doesn't love shopping? I love being able to look at my shopping cart full of Swirl results and say, you know, this one I know isn't really relevant, or these are the five results, or maybe this is the source, or these are the sources that I want my data from today. That's another way of allowing the user to bring their expertise and experience and knowledge and say, no, 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 Collibra, not ThoughtSpot, Snowflake, not Oracle, whatever. And I'm not picking on anybody. We all can say they're all present. They all have value. The question is, which one has the answer for me today? Well, until they can write the query with the context that answers that, you know, I think the key is to keep the user in the loop, make sure that there are citations, and ultimately that in a year, the systems will be smarter and many of these problems will be solved. After all, almost all the naive search engines, right, that were BM25 or whatever, they pretty much all have vector upgrades now. The only question is, can you wait long enough to vectorize at high dimensional space a few million documents?
Exactly. Yeah, sometimes when I use ChatGPT, I don't use it that often, by the way, for some reason. Maybe it says something about me. Maybe I should, learn to do it. But sometimes, as you said, you know, it just generates something. It seems a little average. You know, it's a code snippet or something like that. You try it, it doesn't work. At that point, when I get frustrated a little bit, I'm like, can you show me the source? Maybe a link to Stack Overflow so I can go and drill in for myself. You know, I don't have to sort of keep pounding at you and asking, you know, okay, that didn't work. This didn't work. Because I can do the same thing just staring at the Stack Overflow page, right? And maybe there have been already some updates and someone said, no, that doesn't work. You know, sometimes you see the selected answer, but then there is another one which everyone says that works, not the selected one. So that's just funny. Yeah, that's amazing. So Reader LLM, like just to sort of bring it back to the ground, especially for those who are sort of novice, like myself, I still consider myself novice. You know, have you sort of taken a Reader LLM off the shelf? You sort of implemented someone's paper or took it, or did you have to train it? How did you go about it?
We built it largely from it's been an evolving thing, but there definitely are other Reader LLMs out there. The key is to preserve the structure, right, and the pieces of the structure that allows you to do similarity. We implemented our own similarity and other algos. We also do things like named entity recognition and sentiment analysis. LLMs are great at that stuff. It can do scoring for machine learning purposes, right? So we have a nice intention detection system now that will essentially, based on the responses that you get, tell you which sources are most relevant right up front, right? Based on the responses and also optionally ratings, right? If you want to bring that into the system. Passage detection is totally in response. Our Reader LLM's passage detection is totally in response to the problem you described, right? Which is the data's messy. And we don't necessarily want to ship 500, 100 page PDFs that have essentially the same data. So there it finds the most relevant passage super quickly and truncates the document down to a window around it. Those are the things, and we've really implemented it ourselves. It's our own creation.
Oh, that's fantastic. So that's your secret sauce as well. I mean, that's something to be proud of. And also, I want to sort of close off the sort of, you know, description that you gave, or maybe looking a bit into the future. Does Swirl have some way of feedback? Do you plan to, if not, do you plan to implement? Do you think it's reasonable to have a feedback loop? You know, like in ChatGPT, you can say thumbs up, thumbs down. You cannot say much. You know, you can say this was the answer. I don't know if that's gonna go into the loop, but whatever, because it gives me the joy of sort of completing it. Yeah.
Oh yes. So when Swirl AI Connect is deployed in the enterprise, for starters, you get to connect the data and get RAG and your choice of AIs. And by the way, it's again, configuration for the AI. You put your keys in, right? Pick the model and you can RAG against it. You can also choose the role you want to use different generative AI in, right? So you can use it for query writing. You can use it for direct answer. You can use it for RAG. If it has embeddings, you can use that to power the Reader LLM. So just to be clear there, it's a bit more flexible.
I was asking about feedback, right? So like, do you plan,
yes.
Do you have it? And if not, do you plan, do you think it's reasonable to have it?
Right. Absolutely. So after you deploy AI Connect, as mentioned, you get those abilities. Then we have an analytics package, which will give you insight as to which sources are providing the most relevant responses and rating and putting all of that into dashboards, understanding who are the number one users, who write the best prompts, who get which sources produce the best results, which prompts produce it. Absolutely, it's all part of the offering. And ultimately, it's part of what we tailor, right, for the deployment. And again, that can be on premises. But AI Connect is the key because it's collecting that data on, again, always in the customer's private cloud. Like, we don't see it, we're not SaaS. But that data is absolutely turnable into gold, a variety of different gold things. And so you can ultimately figure out which AI works best for which groups. You can figure out which sources, right, are providing the best input for RAG, et cetera.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love that you do have feedback. I think it's definitely gold. It could also be super messy and noisy and stuff, but it's better than absence of it. Yeah, that's amazing. Maybe like in the past year, so you've been deploying this with clients. Obviously, you don't have to mention the names, but was there something that surprised you, how clients, you know, sort of perceived Swirl?
Yeah, I would say that people have not really been looking for search. If I'm the AI, the explosion of AI and the excitement around AI kind of crowded everything out, drowned everything out. So that's why I think so many of these copy-in architectures were got so much momentum. But and I, by the way, I think people are doing incredible stuff with that. So it's not like those aren't perfectly legitimate. I mean, every database ever starts that way, right? You put the data in and you get insight out. It's just that there's a bit more to the story, right? There's a whole nother world of, well, there's a lot of these, and I just moved them to cloud and I can't necessarily do it. But people weren't thinking search. I'm not sure what they believed the answer would be, but there were some excellent posts. There was one on LinkedIn by Vector Ventures, I think, or I should probably get the name right. But in any event, they published an excellent piece about how search is probably the answer to making AI work in a lot of these cases. And you know, they also point out there's not that many people who have come at it from the search perspective. So that was a bit surprising to me because the large enterprise has always loved search. Always. Because that's how knowledge workers and people get stuff done, right? It's yes, you have business intelligence and dashboards and reporting, and we like those things, but so much of the qualitative, why did things happen? Explain it to me. How do I solve this? That's been something that search did a good job of. Ultimately, it's a technology, right? And the marriage of search with LLM, that seems to be the unlocker, if you will, in the enterprise. And that was surprising to me, right? I thought that there would be much more of a search-first approach. And I think everybody had to get through the understanding of what it means to adopt AI and how the first generation works. And now I think people are recognizing real-time architecture using systems of record with re-ranking and then just stay keeping up, right, with the incredible innovation in let's call it generative AI, right? That's the interesting thing. But again, I come back to what I said at the beginning. There are going to be many, many incredible generative AIs. They're going to do different things that we haven't even seen. I don't think the most extraordinary ones. They'll be from the big science publishers. They're going to build incredible life sciences GAI. I'm sure people like Bloomberg, FT, they're going to build incredible financial ones. And that's great. All of those still need your data to operate on your environment and give you answers that are meaningful. And that problem is the problem that Swirl solves.
So just to understand, what were they expecting? Was it like chat interface, or you said they didn't expect search?
No, they thought they would
What
ask
was?
the AI question,
Oh
right?
yeah, so
Just
they
like
thought like a chat, right?
yeah, that everybody wants kind of a conversational interface. You know, another thing I learned, actually, you really reminded me. People are not so interested in the idea that there is an AI place that you go. I think another very logical step is business folks, knowledge workers, they would like to use the channels they use today. So rather than I have to have a new place to go, why can't I talk to it on Teams or in Slack or on my WhatsApp? Why can't I text it? If I need to get a visual, I could always go to a screen, right? And then I could have it show me the underlying data, show me the graph, show me the chart. But for the future is not applications that are destinations. The future is an ongoing dialogue with the AI that understands your business, your world, has access to your data, and becomes your trusted advisor and agent. I don't want to use the word co-pilot because I think that's a little too, it's much more your confidant. It's much more your agent. It's going to tell you stuff like, hey, that question you asked last month, there's a very different answer this month. That's a pretty interesting thing. Or it's going to let you explore. So, you know, tell me about our customer service ratings. Well, which region, right? Disambiguation, which was previously something, you know, that you would do like through facets in search, right? That's the kind of thing that should become more dialogue oriented. But those things, that's going to take some time, because in order to know how to disambiguate, you still have to know what data is relevant, right? So that's been surprising. But I think we're going to see a wave of search-driven innovation. And I'm excited about it. I think the more people shift away from innovating in a repository to innovating across repositories, we'll see, you know, another layer of innovation and even more productivity lift, right, for the people who use it.
Oh, yeah, that's fantastic the way I put it. And I'm glad to hear this, because as a search professional, you know, now a product manager, I love the fact that the power horse of, you know, the future of AI still continues to be search, right, at the core. And I think search, it also says that search isn't solved. And maybe this is another iteration that we will approach it. But it's like, because search is also perception, right? It's also how you express yourself, how you perceive what you see. Maybe the interfaces will change, right? So sometimes I do want to, you know, that product that Google had, Google Glass, sometimes I want to have glass on me to take a picture, or, you know, not to be as distracted by going and fetching my phone or something, right? Because today I still have to do that. It's not as immersive experience. And also, I've noticed working with engineers now, when I flipped on this side of, you know, the process, I'm a product manager, so I keep thinking about things and they keep coding. And sometimes I've noticed that they don't even go back on Slack for like a couple hours when I ask something, because they don't want to be, distracted from their ideas. So maybe there could be a way for me, me or agent or whoever, to sort of sneak into their ID, ask a question, talk to them, right? That would be fantastic. Maybe it sounds also a little crazy, like you still want to have privacy and sort of, you know, flow. But at the same time, there is reality of your job, right? You do need to go back to your email, to your Slack, to whatever you're using, Teams, and get distracted. And then you forget what is it that you've been on to when you come back to your mode of execution.
Absolutely. You know, in a way, applications are distracting. I think there was a really good study recently that showed the danger of interrupting engineers, right, because of the context switch. It's definitely the same for business people. They're just like everybody else, right? Context matters, and it can be hard to switch. I think that's the real promise of AI. Look at ChatGPT. You go to ChatGPT, they're going to have search soon, web search. You can ask it questions. You don't have to go to Google and Bing and five other places, right, to get it. And that is the real possibility, that you would choose the way you want to interact with it. And that thing, in theory, that single point, that single pane of glass or single conversational agent, right, that could potentially be in front of many, many sources of data. And that, I think that's what people realize. It's hard to say what does it really look like in 5 years if AI really continues along the path it's on? The answer is, it's the end of applications.
Yeah, exactly. And going back to being immersive and sort of feeling that I'm myself and I am in control, and not like vice versa. When today I don't feel like I'm in control, you know, applications update by themselves, iPhone restarts. I have no idea what's in that update. I will not be able to ever understand what they do, but they do it. So sometimes I feel like whatever I have bought belongs to someone else. But probably this will change, and I think this should change. As we wrap up, I was thinking, is there something you want to sort of call out to the community and say, you know, by now Swirl obviously has progressed. You guys are open source. I love it. You have a bunch of contributors probably that you trust and you work with. But is there anything that you would, benefit from calling out the larger community?
I think I'm very happy to see the folks shift in focus towards search. I think the thing I'd call out is to say, there are many different user communities that want to consume AI that will benefit from it. And I think the key is not to go too far on the hype cycle, right? And because honestly, another thing I've learned is not everybody is into the details of how AI works, right? And like fine tuning is an example. It's a very deep discussion at some level. I'm no expert, right? I can tell you a lot about it, but I think there's people who've done much more on it than I will ever do. But at the end of the day, the user, that's way, way, way far from the user's head, right? What they're trying to understand, and the people who are making decisions about bringing these things in, are, is it safe? How can I trust it? How do I get it to provide a benefit? So I think the honest thing is, rather than focusing on like we've got a few more tokens than somebody else, talk about use cases. Focus on the user. I think that's where that's what Swirl did from the beginning. Because if you're in search, like there is nothing but the user, right? The user's intent is everything, right? And from like we can go back to lots of great writing about that, from Baerza Yates to Tung Kelang and all points in between. But the user's intent's important, and that's the thing to focus on. What are they trying to accomplish? And build great use cases that ultimately, allow people to focus on the things they'd rather focus on instead of, the minutiae and the time of collecting all these different data points.
Yeah, exactly.
That's, I think, what we need to do as a tech industry responding to the user demand for AI. My two cents.
Oh, that's amazing. Don't try to outsmart the users and make things that you produce explainable, and so they probably will adopt them quicker. That's amazing. I also see a super, maybe provocative, really nice one from your side where you say that you outshined Google. I will link it in the show notes and maybe we'll discuss it at some point as well. Something about ranking. Look, Sid, I really enjoyed chatting to you today. I'm sure there will be someone, in the community reaching out and maybe trying out Swirl. To be honest, it's itching for me to try it out, right? When I mentioned it in my company and someone said, I would love to have that single keyword box so that I can search Slack and Confluence and email and everything. That's amazing. That's fantastic. And also amazing that you guys do it in the open so everyone can try it. All the best to you. Good luck in whatever you are building in your next big things.
Dimitri, thank you so much. It was great to talk to you. And when you want to ready to try Swirl, get the open source version and join our Slack, and we'll be happy to help.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. Enjoy your day.
You too.